Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
I don't think it's ever bad to get a day off, yeah. But I also believe that in August you will look back and wish that they would have played.
Yes.
8-7 Milwaukee leading. Half. Not running. The pitch. Get on the ground to third. Durbin goes to second. One over to first. Double play. And the ball game is over.
Because there'll be in some sort of starting pitching crisis or bullpen dilemma.
Chamber didn't have his best day. Just left some pitches kind of the middle-ish of the plate and some breaking balls up, and they did a nice job.
You look later in the season, and those are the days, the dog days of August, if you will.
Yes.
Where you want those. Could you want those idle moments.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Let's go.
Good Friday morning, Chicago. Welcome to the Mully and Haw Show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. A beautiful day in the city. It's going to be hot. It is going to be summer because it is hot and it is summer. It is Friday, and we did make it. And it is PCA Day here on The Score, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. Mully has a day off, but fear not. We have a big show nonetheless because it's all building up to 9:30. Pete Crow Armstrong, what's your favorite nickname? What's your favorite PCA moment? What's your favorite history that you've made? He's going to be here 9:30 today. Cubs and Mariners in town later. 120 games all weekend long. It's going to be a great weekend at Wrigley Field, a hot one. But hey, look at the calendar. It's about time. Ball may be flying out of the ballpark. Maybe PCA will deposit a few more in the bleachers. And Pete Crow Armstrong will be right here on The Score at 9:30. Up until then, Stacey Dales before that 9 o'clock. We'll go backward. Coom, who's calling everything from the booth next to Pat Hughes.
Noster Coom, right?
What a week Noster for the radio Coom? Crew. Zach steps in last weekend. Pat takes a couple days. Pat comes back and is narrating a movie script, essentially, and comes up big with big moments. And then Coom yesterday. Yeah, Nostrakumus. Nostrakumus comes through again.
Nostrakumus.
He called the homer before it was hit. Can we have that just for to let people know a glimpse of the greatness that we are in the midst of? Dansby Swanson was at the plate in the seventh inning. I think it was the seventh inning. But Ron Coomer was ahead of the game, as usual. Do we have that, Tyler? Here it is. Or do we have that, Tyler? That's okay. Let's get that, Tyler. Okay. So Coom is at 8, 7:25, Casey Johnson talking Bulls because we have a Game 7 in the NBA. We'll talk about that. And up until then, we will get to a little bit of everything because, and I also kind of get to the bottom of this, when Dustin was appointed assistant manager. Did not realize that Dustin was making out the lineup card today.
Well, come on. Wouldn't it be a massive upset if PCA was not in the lineup today? I mean, he's going to be in the lineup today, right? Well, I mean, if he's not in the lineup today, like, I mean, that would be
okay, but let's refresh people's memories in case they just got out of bed. In case you're just waking up, you like to say that on the pregame show, and I think it's good. But in case you're just waking up, Dustin assured everybody that PCA was going to be in the lineup today.
Okay, if PCA is not in the lineup, and if it doesn't have anything to do with getting upset with your line of questioning at 9:30, okay, I will walk to work on Monday morning.
I can't wait.
Okay, if PCA is not in the lineup today, okay, I will walk to work on Monday morning.
All right, it's a sure thing. Okay? It's a pretty sure thing.
Now, the question is, where should PCA bat? And as you heard coming in,
it's a good one.
The game ended with Suzuki grounding into a double play. Ian Happ on base. Not sure why Ian Happ wasn't on second base. Not sure why Ian Happ hadn't scored the tying run since the $500 million man was up to the plate with no outs.
Okay,
and PCA
relax. They split with the Brewers. They're 16 games over. It's okay to lose a game to the Brewers. It was a close one.
Is it time to flip PCA and Suzuki in the lineup so that PCA gets up possibly one more? You don't want PCA standing there in the on-deck circle.
Well, somewhere in the marquee studio, there is a producer who agrees with you. Because right after the last out, and Seiya Suzuki did not beat out the double play grounder that ended the game, they flashed immediately to PCA in the on-deck circle.
Reminding every
Cub fan across America of who didn't get to bat. And why maybe they would agree with you that, you know where I stand. If it were up to me, PCA wouldn't be batting third. He'd be batting first.
Right. And to my argument, it would fit, but I still think Ian Happ is today still the better option because he does have better approaches.
You don't have to worry about
the righty lefty thing.
Here's what I'll tell you about your approach.
My approach.
Okay. The approach is great for Ian Happ. He's grindy. He's disciplined and he's selective and he's all of those things. He's not PCA. He's not Pete Crow Armstrong, who made history yesterday by becoming the fastest Cub ever to get 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases in a season. It took him 73 games, I believe. 73 games for PCA. He shattered the Cubs record of 96 games, Sammy Sosa, back in 1994 when the bowing began.
Isn't it interesting, too, that yesterday Bruce said, like, the comp for an outfielder and he went to Sosa and then these two again connected based on the 2020? That stood out to me, I thought, back to yesterday's show and Bruce pointing that out. When asked about what would the comp be, the best outfielder since, and Bruce went to Sosa.
Well, Bruce is on top of his game. A lot of people are on top of their games. This Cubs season is fun and bringing out the best in everyone, it seems, around the team, which brings us back to Ron Coomer. Ron Coomer, Dansby Swanson at the plate. This is what he said before Dansby Swanson did this.
Now, this would be a time you would absolutely sell out on a fastball. Same thing with the 3-0 pitch. And if he doesn't throw it, he doesn't throw it. But I would sell out on a fastball inside and look to hit one to the bleachers.
The 3-1. Dansby swings and drives it to the bleachers, Ron, just as you said, all the way back, home run for Dansby Swanson. Get out the tape measure for Dansby, a long blast, halfway up into the seats.
Now that's calling it before it happens. That is first guessing all of the things that Ron Coomer does so well. We will talk to him at 8 o'clock about the week it has been, the season it's becoming. And Pete Crow Armstrong generating all of that power, and he's 6 feet tall, 185 pounds? It just is remarkable. I don't want him to hit in home run derby. I think that comes up every now and then. It's okay. But nonetheless, the Cubs, they lost that game. They lost to the Brewers. Jameson Taillon wasn't good. His first time in six starts, he wasn't a quote-unquote quality start. He did give up a few more dingers and now has given up 18, third most in the majors, 18 home run balls. It continues to be a problem. Apologies to Bruce, but it is a problem, and I think it's something that you want to get to the bottom of. And even post-game, he did address that. We'll get into some of that later. He did address the fact that he may have to look at things a little bit differently moving forward because he's just giving up the long ball at too frequent of a rate. So the Brewers did what they needed to do. They split with the Cubs. Freddie Peralta was pretty good. Wasn't great. I think that he's a guy.
Wasn't that interesting, David? Now, there were all the websites out there, everything pointed that they were going to start the rookie supposed to start on Wednesday.
When we left here at 10 o'clock, most indications by the most traditional sources that we use, right? The online probable pitchers, the people that cover the team.
Nobody on Twitter was speculating anything.
Jacob Mizorowski, the phenom, 6'7", fireballer, just made his debut last week. He was supposed to pitch against the Cubs. To me, it indicates that Brewers are a little bit, they should be, but the Brewers are worried about falling too far behind. They knew they needed that game. In Milwaukee on our sister station. I'm sure that Sparky was talking about that being a must-win. Or maybe it was Rami. I've talked to both of them in the past couple weeks on Milwaukee radio. They're worried up in Milwaukee about the Cubs because they're unlikely to catch them. And I think that maybe yesterday reflected that.
Freddie, so they threw their ace.
Yes.
And I think they were saying that this was a must-win statement game for them. And if you saw the emotion.
I agree with that.
If you saw the emotion after the game, which you may not have. I saw it on social media. I did not see it right there on Marquee. But the reaction of their skipper, who's been on this show before, Murph.
Yeah.
I mean, he was fired
up. You know why?
I know why. They were upset with the umpire.
The umpiring in the ninth inning was egregiously bad.
I think they, on the check swing, they kind of made a make good on the missed strike earlier, maybe.
I think
on the Kyle Tucker check.
When I saw Murph, and he didn't have to be an expert lip reader to know exactly what he was shouting at the home plate umpire. Because there were a couple calls that were just botched.
There was some intensity, though, right? I mean, there was some intensity.
Well, Pat Murphy's an intense dude. That's why he's a great manager. That's why he has lasted this long. He's an intense dude. But I thought he had a point. And so you're right. It did look like they had a celebration that was more vibrant and exuberant than your typical June 19th victory.
Right. That was more like August 19th or September 19th than June 19th. And that was the biggest crowd Wrigley's had so far this year. Biggest crowd, 41,000 and change.
It's unbelievable how they turned out. And this weekend, three straight 120 games, three straight afternoons.
They might push it this weekend. I mean, it's wow.
It's where you want to be.
Yeah.
If you're a sports fan in Chicago, unless you're a Sox fan, but if you're a sports fan in Chicago, Wrigley Field is the place to be. And it was Trevor McGill, who was on the mound getting a 16th save in the ninth inning that was getting squeezed badly. That was really bad umpiring in the ninth inning. I'm sorry. I'm not going to get fined for that. Murph might. But yeah. Home plate umpire Adam Beck was terrible.
Even Coombe was like, during the Ian Happ at bat, he was like, okay, we've got the use of television replay. He's like, I thought it was close. And then he said it was a strike.
But the thing is, there were like three pitches like that. It wasn't just one that walked the hitter. And it was getting a little bit nerve-wracking if you're a Brewers fan and you're watching that, because this is the Cub team you can never count out. And I think that's the one thing we'll be reminded in a loss. Yes, they lost. Yes, it's a game you wanted to win. Tyone could have been better. But it reminded you the way they came back that you could never count them out. And they did hit a couple home runs. They did hit a few home runs, and that was nice to see. You had Dansby Swanson, Ian Happ, and PCA getting his 20th of the season. Looking forward to talking to him. He's no stranger to this station, though. He's been on quite a bit, even before he was one of becoming the face of baseball. Just back when he was a blue-haired kid, nobody could remember his name, Murph. So that was fun. The Cubs game was actually entertaining. And then flipping back and forth between them and the White Sox, who had a doubleheader. Boy, the Sox, they lost their 7th and 8th straight games to the Cardinals. Wilson Contreras had himself quite a day for the Cardinals, factored into both victories for St. Louis. And the Sox come close but can't close. And it has nothing to do with their closer. They just can't win close games. And there are a variety of reasons for that. It usually comes back to talent. And they just could not beat the Cardinals. And so what happened yesterday in Chicago was the NL Central teams, the NL Central rivals of the Cubs won three games. Not a good day for Chicago baseball.
What do you think the odds were that Chicago baseball would go 0-3 yesterday, right? 0-3. I mean, it's usually the doubleheaders are splits most of the time, and then the Cubs White lost
Sox,
as well.
Not White Sox doubleheaders.
Not White Sox doubleheaders.
White Sox doubleheaders, unfortunately. This year, last 3 years, I bet you they have been swept more than they have split. Just a hunch. But when you lose as many games as they are in the midst of losing, it's a pretty good hunch. And yesterday, Vassell in the second game, the bullpen game, didn't have it. And it's tough because there are pieces on that pitching staff that you like, and there are pieces in that lineup that you understand why they're getting these opportunities, but they just cannot do things in a consistent level.
And I don't think they had 41,000 at the rate. But they did have some drama in the second game. This is the thing about the White Sox. I mean, you do respect the grit. And it's not being condescending. You do respect the grit because Andrew Benintendi, two outs in the seventh, there was basically friends and relatives that were just sticking around to see how this one finished. And he hits a grand slam. So he made it close. They had a five-run inning. They tied it at six, and they couldn't close it out in extras. Just a tough day to be on the South Side. So Sox lose two. Cubs lose one. Sox are on the road. They play the Blue Jays for a series in Toronto this weekend. And the Cubs are at home against the Mariners. That was the baseball portion of Thursday. Then you take a breath, maybe have some dinner, work out, whatever. Game six delivered. Game six delivered. And I know it was a big deal to most people who are NBA fans around the country, maybe watching here in Chicago or around the league. But, you know, in 49 states, it was just game six. But this is Indiana. And in Indianapolis, it was an event. TJ McConnell, oh my gosh, did he come through? Pacers beat the Thunder, who barely showed up. MVP SGA, MIA. Eight turnovers, seven field goals. You can't have that. Tyrese Halliburton, did he play? Absolutely, he played. And he only had 14 points. And maybe some of the injury might have been exaggerated. But the psychological edge that the Pacers gained from having him on the court from the first opening tap and as much as he played, hard to measure. Hard to measure. And he is a guy that has been Mr. Clutch. And when they needed him most, he came through. And regardless of how sloppy he looked early, he did look a little clunky. Then he got into the rhythm. He had three field goals in the first half, all threes. And I don't know what's going to happen in game seven. I have no idea what to expect Sunday night in Oklahoma City. And that, to me, is an indictment on the Thunder. They won 68 games. If they don't close it out with an NBA title, where will that rank in the most unfulfilling NBA seasons ever? Because they should win. Who had the Pacers winning the title at the beginning of the playoffs? Outside of Marion County. Outside of Marion County in Indiana, who had the Pacers? Nobody. The best thing you can say about TJ McConnell, the highest compliment I could give him, is like he strikes me as somebody who grew up in small town Indiana, shooting baskets on the driveway.
He's got Hoosiers written all over. Got Hoosiers written all over.
TJ Chitwood. That guy.
I'll make it.
He looks at Rick Carlisle. I just envision this Sunday night. They're calling timeout. They got one possession left. 9 seconds to go. And Halliburton wants the ball. And Siakam wants the ball. And Carlisle turns to TJ McConnell. And TJ McConnell looks up at him. And he says, I'll make it. And they call the play. Work off the screen. And TJ McConnell buries it. Pacers win. Oh my gosh, that would be magic.
That would be so awesome.
We would need Pat Hughes because that would be a movie. The sequel. Talk about a sequel. Pacers beat OKC for the NBA title.
But who outside of Oklahoma City, unless you invested in it, is not rooting for the Pacers right now? I mean, we should all be Pacers fans right now for a couple of reasons. But the main one is that they've pushed this thing to the absolute limit. Absolute limit.
I did not have them in game seven. I thought they would lose. I thought they didn't have enough, and maybe the Halliburton injury was indicative of just how they had come as far as it possibly could, but they were not going to be able to finish the job. Instead, guys like Obi Toppin, 20 points. Membard, 17. Siakam had 16 and 13, a double-double. You expect that. But Halliburton playing through the pain is almost just a perfect metaphor for this team because they just find a way. And they have found a way. And TJ McConnell, the son of a coach, And he was the factor. He was the X factor last night, coming off the bench, doing more than he knew he was going to have to do a little bit more. And they got off to a terrible start. They were down 10-2. And you thought, all right, nice season. All those people in yellow T-shirts have to go home unhappy. But then they turned it around.
And Rick Carlisle called what ended up being an amazing timeout. And he did the typical coach thing where he walks away, lets the guys come and sit down, probably had a couple of words for each other, mm-hmm. right? And then mm-hmm. he comes back in and guides. And from that point on, it really flipped in the first quarter. And then at the half, it wasn't even close. It was 64-42 at the half.
Yes.
I mean, it's an incredibly low-scoring half as well, especially for the Thunder. But I thought he did a magnificent coaching. That timeout was just taken at just the right time.
He pushed all the right buttons. He also backed off on the full court pressure and made a little bit more I think their half-court defense was much better as a result. They just were doing what they needed to do. They were taking better shots. They were hitting more shots. They were playing at home, and I think that crowd, they fed off what has to be – well, I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, but I think these two teams are – they enjoy probably the biggest home court advantage of any team in the playoffs, any two teams in the playoffs. It's hard to pick one over the other. I would be biased if I did. I don't know if it's any louder in Oklahoma City or than it is in Indianapolis. Both places are just wild, frenzied basketball bedlam places to be during the finals. So it's going to be great Sunday night, game 7. Hope everybody's healthy. I hope it comes down to the final possession. And I hope TJ McConnell hits the game winner and walks off into Indiana legend. That would be awesome. That would be awesome to see. Did it bother anybody? Did it bother you, Dustin, that the Thunder basically called off? They just quit. The fourth quarter, they sat all the starters.
I think it's smart. I don't think you're going to save the energy. Save the energy. Let them party. Let the Pacers feel great about everything. I don't think there was anything to be gained. I mean, is it good for the sport? No. I mean, can you imagine if they break down, and I'm sure they do, the quarter-by-quarter ratings mm-hmm. of that game, right? I mean, I felt comfortable in the third quarter falling asleep. And I said, if I happen to wake up, I hit the record on the DVR, I said, if I happen to wake up and there was this epic comeback, then okay, so be it. But I'm like, I'm not going to lose a whole night of sleep when they're up by this much going into
the Well, I know
that
quarter. You're a big fan of the ABC crew that does the game.
So,
yeah,
no.
I knew that you wanted it. It had to be a big sacrifice to turn that TV off.
I'd rather
off.
Listen to my cat and dog bark and hiss at each other than listen to those three.
I did want to watch NBA. Some of the post game. I did not see this part, but we'll have to try to find it. It was TJ McConnell is the son of a coach, and it was the NBA, I think it was NBA TV, who had the post game, and TJ McConnell's dad was the guy who coached him. He's a coach in Western Pennsylvania, and he crashed the set. And
it's a little too long to play right now, but yeah. We do have it. We will. That's a tease.
We'll get it.
That's a tease.
We'll get it probably at the end of the 6 o'clock hour before 7. We've got other good audio from Brian Urlacher, who weighed in on Ben Johnson. We'll get to that sometime this morning. We've got a packed show because Casey Johnson's at 7:25. Ron Coomer, Nostrakumas, joins us at 8. 9 o'clock, Stacey Dales, all building up to 9:30, and Pete Crow Armstrong starts his day basically before the Cubs take on the Mariners by talking to us right here on The Score. Don't go anywhere. The Pick 6 is next. Mully is off today. We're going to be here till 10, building a bridge to Marshall Harris and Mark Grody at Gallagher Way. That's going to be quite an event. You don't want to miss that either. It's going to be fun from 10 to 12:45. Leading up to Cubs Mariners, followed by Zach Zaidman's pregame at 12:45, all brought to you by IDOT. The Illinois Department of Transportation will be on hand with activities to show you how you can be safe driving home from the game. Visit itsnotagameillinois.com to learn more. Keep it right there. The pick six is next. It's Mullin Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's Pick Six with Mullin Haas, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haas. Pick Six with Mullin Haas starts now.
How do we feel about Jameson Taillon after the veteran gave up 5 earned runs in 4 innings pitch, including 2 more home runs before leaving quicker than anybody thought in an 8-7 loss to the Brewers yesterday? Was this the exception or the rule? Anybody wonder if Craig Counsell should have skipped Taillon and started Kate Horton? Do you like Horton going Saturday against the Mariners?
I think the key is to not overreact and not give up on Jameson Taillon, who has been very consistent, and he has stepped forward. When you talk about people who have done their jobs better in the absence of Shota Imanaga, right at a time where the Cubs needed that, Jameson Taillon is near the top of that list. Now, you balance that with the disappointment of him giving up 3 more home runs and now giving up 18 homers, which is tied for 3rd in most in baseball. So there's that balance as well. I don't know that that's going to change much, because that is who he has been this year. He says he's going to get to the bottom of it. I hope that he does, and soon. 2 home runs yesterday, not 3. He is 3rd highest total in the majors. I think all this did to me was underscore a couple things. Number one, this is why Jed Hoyer is going to go out and get a top-of-the-rotation starter. Number two, this is why you can't leave Cade Horton out of the rotation entirely. You need him to pitch tomorrow. Matthew Boyd is going today, and that's a good decision. And I'm fine with them going back to Horton and not skipping him altogether, just giving him an extra day, because I think you need his consistency. Get that consistency from a rookie? Yes. He's been one of your better starting pitchers since he has been brought up. So the Taillon thing you can accept. But it's a grim reminder that you do need a true, full-fledged ace.
Not one, but 2. So you need Seiya to continue to hit, but you need Shota to come back and really, you know, dominate. That is what sticks out. I appreciate that Jameson Taillon does own it and says he's going to work on it. I don't doubt that he's going to work on it. And then you almost wonder if you feel good about the Cubs making the postseason, if you wonder if, like, it's better if Taillon opens up on the road, you know, not at Wrigley, where the ball might fly out a little bit easier than other places, depending, because he's like, well, I am a fly ball pitcher, and I allow solo home runs. Like, that's okay. It's not okay with this Cubs fan. No, I don't think they should have had Horton throw yesterday. I think how they're handling Horton, again, tip of the cap to the Cubs. I think this is spot on. I think this is very smart the way they're doing it. They, you know, his start was missed. They skipped him. They're skipping him again. So he's getting a little extra rest. I think that should pay off, but not too much where he's going to get out of his mix.
You don't want the rest to lead to rust.
No.
So that's what they're trying to do. Strike that balance.
I'm agreeing with you guys. I do agree with the Taillon start and taking Cade Horton and putting him on Saturday. Would have been a little more fun to see, because we haven't seen Cade Horton in a little bit, sure. But right now, Taillon has been the fill-in ace pitcher for the Cubs. And we need to see, as Cubs fans, we need to see Cade Horton. I don't need another arm getting thrown out in this Cubs rotation, because they just keep dealing with the injury bug. So setting him back for a couple days, rest, and then get set for Saturday, I can't disagree with that. And so, but again, like what Dustin said, I love that J-Mo owned up to it, but again, you still gave up 2 home runs.
That's Tyler Buderbaugh, not to be confused with Tyler Farengol. Tyler Farengol is baby tea. Tyler Buderbaugh is, I don't know.
Butterball.
Butterball. Okay, let's go with that.
Ooh, great question.
All right, what was more impressive for the struggling White Sox in Game 1, the loss to the Cardinals? They also lost Game 2. Sean Burke giving up 2 runs and 4 hits in 5 1/3, or Grant Taylor working a 1-2-3 in relief? Are Burke and Taylor two pitchers you believe will be a big part of the staff when the Sox are good again? How many pitchers on the MLB roster for the Sox can you say the same about?
Well, they're going to find out. I think it's fascinating to see what the White Sox are in the midst of. Sean Burke, I think, is going to be a guy that keeps on being thrown out there every fifth day. I think he could be a contributor. Davis Martin comes to mind. Grant Taylor, yes, absolutely. What role to be determined later. Noah Schultz made his AAA debut last night, so he is on the way. There are guys who can help. Mike Vassell, I think, will be better than he was yesterday, and certainly when you look at Shane Smith, he's a guy who's a Rule 5 pitcher that can be part of the future as well. The White Sox are in the midst of what they're referred to as roster velocity. And this is something very interesting. Baseball Prospectus. Matthew Trueblood wrote about this in Baseball Prospectus. Roster velocity. They've tried 51 players so far this year. 30 of those players they have under team control for multiple seasons ahead. It's referred to as a new plan. Chris Getz is throwing as much against the wall as he can to see what sticks. And when you're in the midst of an 8-game losing streak and you're staring at your third straight 100-loss season, the more chances you take, the more times you're going to hit. So I think you keep on trotting people out there, seeing what you've got, and flipping the veterans that you can and making the most of what is becoming another long season. You're seeing progress, but now you got to start seeing some victories.
They are more competitive this time around. There's no doubt about that. I'm a little bit more soured than ever because they couldn't at least split with the Cardinals yesterday. And they tried, and they got close. I mean, game two didn't look close, but Benintendi went boom and hit a Benny bomb. Is that how they
– Benny bomb.
Benny bomb on CHSN yesterday with the grand slam. That was actually kind of cool to see. You know – I guess Grant Taylor and Sean Burke would be in the mix. But again, what is that timeline? Is it 2 years? Is it 3 years? Is it it's not next year, right? Unless there's this influx of Ishbia money is going to be used on the roster, which all indication says it's not going to be. But, I'm not rooting against any of these guys individually.
I mean, I'll give them both credit because, I mean, Sean Burke, yes, he gave up the 2 home runs, but they kept the lead in that game. And then with Grant Taylor, he did a 1-2-3 inning relief, and he refused the Cardinals from getting any more runs in. So, I mean, both get their flowers. I give it more to Taylor because, I mean, that was later in the game. It wasn't his fault that the White Sox blew that game and blew that lead. As far as seeing these two on the roster, I think you should see them on the roster. They're looking like two promising young pitchers for this White Sox team that's starting to find some guys in this roster. But again, we've seen in the past that the White Sox have not been good at making certain trades with some of their young prospects. So should they? Yes. But will they? I don't think so.
I will let you guys ask any questions.
In the White Sox booth the other night, Steve Stone asked Bears rookie tight end Colston Loveland what kind of tight end he'll be.
There was a tight end in this city that actually played pretty well and then had a restaurant, and the name was Mike Ditka, went on to coach a team and all that. Would you consider yourself a prototypical tight end, or are you something different?
I think I'm just a tight end that can do it all. Whatever I'm asked to do, I feel like I can go out there and do it at a high level. Like I said, obviously a ton of improvement needs to be done in every aspect of my game. But, I feel like I can do it all, and I'm excited to just continue to work at it.
That clip courtesy of CHSN. Do you agree with Loveland? How surprised are you of his confidence? And if you had an over-under of his receptions next year at 68, which would be 4 per game, which way would you bet?
First of all, I love it when Stoney kind of crosses over into other sports. The other night it was Colston Loveland in the booth talking Mike Ditka. Then yesterday it was Steve Stone referencing the Florida Panthers trade for Brad Marchand as being the kind of deal teams need to make to get something they don't have. Little grit, little experience, a little bit of sandpaper, that kind of stuff. How teams fit together, roster building. I like that. As for Colston Loveland, he's very humble. He's very direct. He's not going to be as charismatic and exuberant. He's not PCA. He's not football PCA. But he is a guy who is going to be productive. And if I had to take the over under at 68 receptions for next year, that's four per game. I'm going over.
I mean, I like the confidence. I don't think it was cocky. I thought he was confident, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. But I, with all due respect, I mean, I would be absolutely floored in a good way, shocked in a good way, if he had 68 receptions.
Really?
There's just not enough balls to go around. I mean, is Cole Kmet getting benched?
No.
I'm just saying, 68, I mean, first, here's another.
Four
let's just
per
keep
game.
It. I know it seems low, but you also have Rome Odunze and DJ Moore looking to become the next duo, right, to have record-breaking seasons for Bears receiving. We're talking about, I mean, you can, I think if they're playing 12 personnel, since everybody loves to do that, right, 12 personnel, take a drink, you'll be drunk by, you know, whenever during the Bears season, you know, talking 12 personnel. I just think that they're going to go to Cole Kmet more than Colston Loveland. First of all, you know, the other thing I'm still a little bit worried about, is he going to be fully ready to go?
He says so.
Okay.
He says he will be.
Prove me wrong.
Did Stoney ask him that? Inning wasn't long enough?
I love the confidence by the rookie. I mean, it's great. I don't find it cocky at all. But 68 receptions, that's too much for me. Just like what Dustin said, there's a lot of playmakers on this team. And I think we're going to see more of an improvement. I don't know what the line is for Rome Odunze for receptions, I'd put that over. Colston Loveland still has more. He needs to be building his chemistry with Caleb Williams more. Caleb's already got his chemistry with DJ Moore, Rome Odunze, and Cole Kmet. So, I mean, and he's still coming back from his surgery. So, 68 is just, I think he'll get close.
Okay.
But it's too much for me.
Great question, Dan.
On the By the Horns podcast, Casey Johnson, our 725 guest, addresses what could be the Bulls' strategy in next Wednesday's NBA draft, despite having a roster that's guard heavy.
I've been told that is the best player available is definitely in play for the Bulls. Ooh. They will not be averse to taking a guard if a guard slots as, you know, the best player on their board at when they get to number 12. And the logic behind that is, you know, even though they are guard heavy right now, the next roster iteration for the Bulls really is projected for that 2026 offseason, because that's when they get a lot of salary cap space. And really the only guys you can project long term from the backcourt for this team right now are Josh Giddey and Kobe White. Even Ayo Dosunmu, as good as he is, you know, could be potentially a trade candidate down the road.
Can the Bulls draft a guard without trading one? And what do you think of their draft day strategy should be? And is there a player you hope falls to them?
I think they should avoid guards if possible. They have too many already. And there's not somebody that jumps out at you at 12 that's going to be a difference maker enough to stockpile a position that you already have players at. Unless you trade Kobe White or trade Ayo or trade Lonzo Ball on draft night, I don't know how you could go to the podium with all of those guards still under contract and convince people that's the best move to draft another guard. Not when there are guys like maybe Derek Queen on the board. I'm going to stick with him, the center from Maryland. I think there's going to be, you know, Shaka Shonas is going to be a guy from Illinois that, if he's there, is going to be tempting for Arturis Karnišovas. You're going to have other people, Demean, the BYU. Again, you look at, he's 6'9.5". What position will he play? Is he going to be a Josh Giddey type? All these questions have you know, complex answers. It's best available is usually the safest way to go, but you don't want to have a roster with duplicate parts, because that's how you have a roster that doesn't fit together. So I would prefer that they have either a rim protector or somebody like Derek Queen, who is an offensive weapon. And you could envision, even though he doesn't fit into your maybe approach, your 3-and-D approach, I still think you would go for the most talent. Can you be most best available player who's taller than 6'9"?
So now you've got a height restriction on it as well.
I don't know. I mean, I just don't want them to see. I just don't want to see another guard.
You know, as far as like their draft strategy, you know, do they even need one? You just hand out extensions for teams that are just fluttering around 500, who haven't made a playoff or won a playoff series in who knows, God knows when, and the front office is getting rewarded with contract extensions. They obviously do whatever the hell they want to do over there without any ramifications. I mean, I want Derek Queen, but I want Derek Queen for the good of the show. Like, you know, there's been so much talk about him and so much fun and the comparison to Moses Malone and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, Derek Queen, I'm all in on Derek Queen.
Please, no more guards. They've drafted guards what, the last 5 years? No, there doesn't need to be any more guards on this Bulls roster. I'm in the same boat as you guys. I love Derek Queen. He's a rim protector. He actually plays defense that the Bulls lack on, and having a big man to play defense like that. No, they don't need a guard. But the thing is with Derek Queen, I don't know if he's going to fall to where they're sitting. They might have to trade up. And so, you know what? Use some of the guards that you have and not get any more guards, and use that as some trade bait to possibly get up and trade Derek Queen. But stop it with the drafting the guards.
Hey, Matt, Jalen Johnson posted a picture of the fine you gave him. Is this not like a bigger issue than the fine itself?
Well, that's news to me.
Did the Pacers make the right decision on Tyrese Halliburton in game number 6? And what do you think was the turning point of the game? Has this series lived up or down to your expectations level? And because we're not going to be here until Monday, let's get a little prediction.
Tyrese Halliburton made the right decision, and the Pacers did too. He played because he had to play. There was no other choice, really. Unless he was in a cast in the surgical ward or the recovery room. There was no choice. He was going to play. This is why you play. That was a do-or-die moment in a building that was as electric as any NBA arena ever has been. So, yes, they made the right decision to play him. Yes, they did everything necessary to live up to that moment and meet the moment. And I think that Oklahoma City, I fear this. The only thing I fear about Sunday night is that if they don't win, as they should, and I think as they will, I've never wanted to be wrong more, but I think Oklahoma City will win this series and be champion Sunday night in Oklahoma City. But if they lose, I hope that it's all about the Pacers winning and not the Thunder losing. But I could understand people going that way because they won 68 games in the regular season. And if they don't close it out with an NBA title, there will be historical comparisons to the best teams that never won a title. And good. I hope that we'll spend Monday morning talking about those comparisons, because I want Indiana to win. I want the Pacers to have a moment, because you know what? In 49 states, it's just basketball, but this is Indiana.
Go Pacers. It's hard to say that. We've gotten some texts like, how dare you guys say that? I'm a growing up in the 90s kind of Bulls fan through and through, no doubt about that. But this is what makes sports great. Game sevens, teams that, you know, gentlemen sweep, and then they played their rear ends off, and the crowd in Indiana was awesome. So if you were down there and want to tell us about your experience, I'd love to hear from somebody who was at that game. That was really, really awesome. Don't forget, David Haw needs a T-shirt. Yeah, large, extra large. Depends on the day, right? You know, Tyrese Halliburton had to play.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, how many minutes, you know, you got on, you know, how many, you know, is it a Thursday or is it a Monday? You know, if you're like me, I might drop like 8 pounds during the week and then put like the 6 pounds back on the weekend kind of thing.
I don't fluctuate that much.
Yeah, I'm a big fluctuator. Halliburton had to play. I love the way they used him, though.
Yeah.
He played a 23-minute night, so the lowest of the starters, so they were wise. And I'm gonna be wrong probably, but I'm gonna stick with my guns. I'm gonna say Pacers in 7. The thing about this Thunder team is they are very young, and some people think that's what the Achilles is right this second. But for the good of sport, go Pacers.
Obviously, with the outcome, love the fact that they played Tyrese Halliburton. As the Pacers, you needed him in there. It was elimination game, game 6 at home. You needed that to happen. Obviously, I'm glad that they used him. They didn't overplay him. He didn't he was still a factor, like not so much offensively, but he got there with defensively. He had two, got himself two steals, got himself a couple blocks or a couple rebounds. I'm sorry, but that's what you needed. And yes, could be long term injury if he got hurt, but you have all offseason, and this is the time. This is the window for me for the Pacers, and it was to get that cast past that game six to make game seven. I'm going to have to say I think Oklahoma City wins at home. It is tough to play there. My heart says Indiana, but my money says Oklahoma City.
Wait, there's a loaded question.
The Athletic reported that NASCAR and San Diego Sports Tourism Commission are negotiating to hold the race on the streets of Southern California in 2026, causing the Tribune to speculate if next month's event in downtown Chicago could be the final race here. And Mayor Brandon Johnson's office, course, declined to comment. What's your reaction? Would you miss NASCAR in Chicago, and do you dread or look forward to this race?
Kind of neither. I don't know that I dread it, but I don't know that I look forward to it either. The alterations in downtown, the traffic patterns are beginning to be adjusted and all those things, and it can be inconvenient, but I think overall it's been a fascinating experiment, but they've not had cooperation from the weather. It's been bad 2 years in a row, and you wonder what it will be this season or this year or this weekend when they do have it in July. And I saw that story, and I wondered if that means NASCAR is moving out of Chicago. And the fact that there has been no comment makes you think even more, it's even more likely that it is leaving town or maybe not returning next year, which I think would be fine with most people. I don't know if there's anybody out there that would miss NASCAR in Chicago. They should let us know, because I'd like to hear from them. What would you miss and why? It's a sport that I feel like you can appreciate. It's an event that you can appreciate and enjoy. But I just don't know if it's one of those things on the calendar that Chicago sports fans have come to circle necessarily. Maybe I'm dead wrong there. They do a nice job in presenting it. A lot of people work very hard at putting it all together. I'm not sure it would be missed.
In all seriousness, the last time you were not inconvenienced coming to work or leaving from work in Chicago and back to either the northern or western or southern burbs. I mean, it's always an inconvenience. Yesterday, unfortunately, the Eisenhower yesterday morning was closed outbound at 3 a.m. and inbound at 3 a.m. Both ways at 3 a.m. were closed. Inbound and outbound, where you had to get off and do some things, and you know, sad state of affairs. Would it be missed? I typically take off of work during this time of year, so I haven't run into the traffic patterns. I think when you see it on television, I think it does a nice job of propping up our great city. Mm-hmm. I think it puts the city in a good light. What's the economic impact at the end of the day? That's what's most important, probably, for an event like this. Would I miss it? No, but I haven't gone to it either.
Love the idea. It was a great idea, the concept and everything, but it is just too much of a pain in the ass for the traffic and everything like that. I mean, it's, and the first 2 years that they've done it, hasn't it rained out the first day in like both weekends? So, I mean, clearly luck is not on Chicago's side to host NASCAR in the city when it's gotten rained in and it's been slick as hell. So for the NASCAR fans out there, I mean, yes, I think it'd be great for you. Actually, I think Baby T is a huge NASCAR fan, so he probably loves this. But it's just inconvenience as hell, and I don't think it brings in that much. Like, I mean, I don't know. I would love to see how much revenue it brings, but I don't think it brings in that much. And then plus, weather, Mother Nature doesn't want it here because it rains all the time.
I don't think that's an appropriate question.
That is the Pick Six. When we come back, we will have an extra point, and it will have to do with our 9:30 guest, Pete Crow Armstrong, the history he is making and the fun he is having. Keep it right there. It's Mully and Hall. Mully is off today. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's Extra Point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mullion Haw on 670 The Score.
Pete Crow Armstrong, the 930 guest, joined a more elite company Thursday by hitting his 20th home run already. Makes him the fastest Cub ever to have 20 homers, 20 stolen bases before the All-Star break. The youngest Cub ever, only Eric Davis, Jose Canseco, and Fernando Tatis Jr. have ever gotten there faster in a season. Is 40-40 a gimme? How about 45-45? What's the ceiling? In which category? The homers or the stolen bases will be the highest at the end of the season.
I think the thing with Pete Crow Armstrong, which is going to be difficult, already is in some circles, is managing expectations and balancing the enthusiasm that he creates by watching him and being the most watchable player on a very fun Cubs team without being unrealistic in what you expect from him. And I don't know if 45 home runs, I don't know if 40 home runs is even what we should hold him to now. If he gets to 38, is that a bad year? No. No. If he gets 40-40, it seems very attainable. I think he probably will get there. It feels like he's on that kind of a roll. He could cool off. He's likely to cool off. Did anybody expect him to be at 20 homers on June 20th? Only Sammy Sosa has gotten there faster. He is as special of a player as we have seen come through Chicago in a very long time. Reminiscent of Javi Baez because of the excitement. On a caliber and a plane with Chris Bryant, who was the Rookie of the Year and MVP. It's that kind of company he keeps when we make the comparisons. What is the ceiling? The ceiling is really limitless if you're Pete Crow Armstrong, and you don't have to put a cap on it, and you don't have to have, and I'm sure he isn't. I don't think he probably expected, maybe in his wildest dreams, he thought he would be able to attain this kind of success this early in his career. I don't think many other people thought that he could. Fan-wise, maybe they did. But just be here for a long time. Sign a contract that makes you a rich man and you're happy in a Cub uniform for the next decade. And if he's here for a decade, that means a lot of things. You're winning, he's producing, and everybody's happy. I'll take a decade of PCA.
The ceiling is the roof.
I'll take a decade of PCA as well. I wonder if he, ahead of the season or once the season gets going, based on how it's trending, has made some personal goals. And he probably wouldn't tell us if he had, but I'm curious. I do think if he's asking us, I would say his next goal is 40-40. That should be a goal. I do think at the end of the day that the stolen bases will be higher than the home runs. And feel free when you're in the bottom of the ninth with a man on, you know, steal a base, Craig.
Wow. Tough crowd.
I mean, to me, 40-40, I feel like that is, I think that is a gimme. I think this kid in his second, third year, he is proving people, he's surprising everybody. 45-45, all right, it's a little bit of a stretch. The ceiling, I don't know. I think he could be the second player to hit 50-50. It's going to take some time. Took Shohei Ohtani some time, but he's faster than Shohei Ohtani. And, I mean, he doesn't hit the ball as hard or as consistent as Shohei Ohtani, but, I mean, I don't know. I think we're seeing a true star here in Chicago. He might be considered one of the best athletes to ever play in Chicago. 40-40 is gimme. 45-45, pushing it, but screw it. I would love to see, I think we could see 50-50 from PCA in a few years from the road.
The next question that becomes, I think, more relevant to this season, Dustin, I think you alluded to it earlier, and we talk about it all the time, is where he bats in the batting order. And what is the smartest place for him to be to get the most out of this rare season, if it is indeed going to be as rare as it sounds and seems. And what is the best way for him to drive in runs and take advantage of his speed and his slug. I still think leading off has got to be on the table, but I think batting third gives you some options as well. Cleanup makes sense. There's no wrong answer, I suppose, but I think as long as it's no lower than fourth, no lower than fourth. And so you have Happ, who's a switch hitter, Tucker, Suzuki, and then PCA, because it gives you right, left, if you need to.
Is it that simplistic, though? Should it be that simplistic?
I don't know. I don't. I think the criteria changes on a game-to-game, matchup-to-matchup basis, and I think it often is predicated on matchups.
Would you be then willing? Would it then be okay? Could you think Craig Counsell could get that pencil, I don't know if he does it in pen or however they do it these days, if Happ was leading off and batting the other way, mm-hmm. could you get PCA up in the top three somehow, some way?
Possibly.
He just doesn't want to go lefty. He just doesn't want to go lefty-lefty.
I think that's probably part of it. I also wonder, you know, you talk to some managers, and we had one in town for a long time. He won a World Series here in Joe Maddon. You get your three best hitters at the top of the order.
Well, if he's not part of the three best hitters, then who is? Right?
I know.
Would you consider flip-flopping him and Kyle Tucker?
No, I think
Kyle fourth, PCA second.
I think Tucker is where he should be. I think him batting second over the course of a season, as disappointing as some people seem to be with some of his numbers. Not numbers. What are you upset with?
You know, not delivering in situation. You got to at least put the bat on the ball yesterday in the ninth. Got to at least make contact.
Probably two moments in the last week, two sequences where. Yeah, late inning at bats were a little disappointing for Kyle Tucker. I'd agree with that. But it's also a long season, and you go back to the first month, and he is the guy that made a lot of the other things possible.
Made a lot of the other things happen. I'm not totally down. It's the $500 million, and I don't want him running. I know I've taken some crud for that. Mm-hmm. I don't want him running. Enough of him belly flopping around and wearing two kitchen mitts on each hand. No, thank you. And maybe that's part of why he is struggling right now. And just tap the brakes on
the oven gloves aren't a great look. They don't really make anybody look athletic. Really hard to look athletic in oven mitts. It is. You can't.
He's a strong man.
You're not going to look very athletic.
PCA might be the only one, but yeah.
Yeah, maybe so. All right, that is the extra point. Thanks for the pick six and all the thoughts, Tyler and Dustin, weighing in. So I think next, when we come back, TJ McConnell's dad, we talked about TJ McConnell's dad being a basketball coaching icon in Western Pennsylvania, very successful coach. He crashed the set of NBA TV after the Pacers beat Oklahoma City in Indianapolis last night. It was fun to hear. We'll listen to it next. It's Mully and Haw. Mully off today. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Mornings with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Tyrese Halliburton referred to you as the Great White Hope. You certainly put it all out there tonight. What has gotten into you here in these games? And obviously, when your team needs it the most.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, it sounds redundant when I say it, but I'm just trying to do my job. Come in, inject energy, and get our team moving offensively and defensively.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mully off today, talking NBA Finals. Game 7 is Sunday night. Oklahoma City and Indiana. The Pacers go to OKC on the road. Tough environment. No tougher than last night was for the Thunder. And that place was raucous. It was energizing. And it fueled the Pacers, who started slow. Started very slow. They were down 10-2. They looked like they were clunky. They looked like they were tight. They looked like they were worried about how Tyrese Halliburton's calf strain was going to react. And what we heard coming in was TJ McConnell talking about his role in this, because he played a major one. I don't want to say he was the most valuable player on the court for Indiana, but there were stretches where he was indispensable. And he is a 33-year-old backup guard who is a former Pennsylvania schoolboy legend who fits so perfectly into the Pacers' narrative. He should be named, as I have said, TJ Chitwood. I'll make it. He would definitely be the guy who you would trust to make it if Tyrese Halliburton isn't taking the game-winning shot on Sunday night in Game 7. If the Pacers have the chance to do that I want the ball in TJ McConnell's hands. This guy is clutch. Last night, he played off the bench well enough to get 12 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists. And the defense, he's a pest. He's a pest. He's also a son of a coach. He's son of a coach, and his dad, the coach in Western Pennsylvania, definitely had something to say when he was crashing the post-game set for on NBA TV.
What's the distance you need between you and your dad to yell at him for not being taller or not marrying somebody that was taller?
I mean, I know he's standing right there, but...
My man, come on in here. Come on in here, Pops.
Unbelievable.
Who's more fired up
come
right
on
now?
In here.
I love Isaiah. I love him.
That's unbelievable. Woo!
Good to see you, man.
Unreal.
He
finds a way to get in
yeah,
anywhere.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Pops, DJ, I have a picture in
the I'm going to tell you right now, he's a warrior. You're right. It doesn't matter how tall you are.
That's right. That's your fault. The heart of a champion.
Yes.
No
yes.
question. What do you think of his performance tonight?
Excellent. Just disappointing, missed two foul shots in the beginning. I kept saying, man, I wish he'd have made those two foul shots. But he recovered, and we won the game. So I can forget about the foul shots. Anything can happen in game seven.
Always.
We're going to OKC to try to win a world championship. And my son's a part of it, and I can't believe that.
Tim McConnell, proud father of TJ McConnell, the Pacer spark plug. Tim McConnell, tough critic. Tough crowd. TJ McConnell was just one of the biggest differences in a Pacer blowout of Oklahoma City Thunder. And his dad crashes the set uninvited, can't help himself. And he goes on there and he says he missed two foul shots. That's what he led with. That is coach dad. That's every coach dad out there ever. And T.J. McConnell just sat there and nodded. Now, his sister also plays in the WNBA, I believe. She was there. I think she plays for the Phoenix Mercury. But T.J. McConnell was a big difference in that game. The dad crashing the set was classic, and his pride was unmistakable. You could not – he was beaming. He was beaming. He could not stop smiling. And T.J. McConnell had that look on his face like – I've been here before. He's done this to me again. And he was playing a big role on Sunday night. He will play a major role. Now, the good news for the Thunder is that in game sevens in the NBA Finals, I think home teams are 15-4. And that's a number that's hard to ignore. And I think their best way of dealing with what happened on Thursday night in Indianapolis is just to move on like it never happened in Indianapolis. Like Thursday night never happened at all. How else do you respond to that? They were not the same team, it appeared. Now, the Pacer defense had a lot to do with that. The Pacer crowd had a lot to do with that. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander having 8 turnovers and 7 field goals, more turnovers than field goals for an MVP, means that he has got to come out Sunday and reassert himself on his home floor as the best player in the league. If he can't do that, it will leave a mark. It will leave a mark. And it will be similar to what – not the same idea, maybe not as indelible or as impactful, but what we're saying about Connor McDavid in the Stanley Cup Final, best player in the league, unable to get over the top. That's the rhetoric coming out of Edmonton. Will he sign? Will he stay? Can he win there? If Shai Gilgeous-Alexander doesn't finish the job for the Oklahoma City Thunder this year, that would be a fair question. Not will he stay, he's going to stay. But if you're not going to win this year when you have 68 victories and a team coming out of the East that nobody expected to be there, you're not going to have many more situations more conducive for a championship run than the Oklahoma City has right now. They need to seize the moment on Sunday night because they'll be back. It's one of the youngest teams, second youngest team in the NBA. They'll be back. They got all the draft picks, but it might not be any better than it is right now. So that was fun. Tim McConnell crashing TJ's party on the postgame set of
just
NBA.
Just disappointing, missed two foul shots.
NBA TV. He missed two foul shots, Dad, but come on. He was a difference in the game. 12 points, 9 boards, 6 assists, and all that defense. Probably led the team in floor burns. Why'd you lead with that, Dad? He was smiling though when he said it. Gotta love that. Gotta love a proud dad. All right, when we come back, Chicago's proud of Pete Crow Armstrong, and the Cubs have a big series with the Mariners. Is it big? Yeah, it's big. They're all big when you are atop the National League and atop the NL Central, and you have World Series aspirations. We'll talk about it next. It's Mullin Haw, Mully off today. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.